welcome to the Think Computer's weekly tech podcast. This is episode 150. I am Derek, and with me is Bob. What's up, Bob?
What's up, man?
Not much. Just a quick reminder to everyone, this episode is brought to you by Amazon. Go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and purchase your crap. That way it kicks us back a little bit of change, and then we can fund part of this podcast and, you know, try to do things for you guys. So doesn't cost you anything. Just buy your stuff through the affiliate link. Kicks a little bit back to us.
Yes. I actually bought toilet paper on Amazon today. Fun facts. For the first time, I usually, like, household items aren't, like, a good, like, they're not necessarily, like, the best deal, you know what I mean? And most of the time, you just, like, you go to the store and get the stuff, but I was like,
yeah,
I was like, I'm just going to order it. Like, I ordered it in bulk. Like, I ordered a ton, so, and it was pretty cheap, so pretty excited. And I get it in 2 days, because I
primed. Revealing. So. It's very revealing.
I know, right? So, yeah. So, big week in tech. A lot of stuff to talk about, but before we do that, we'll jump into our reviews. And one of my favorite products, probably of 2018, it's just done so well, was the Fractal Design Define S2. So this is the new version of the Fractal Design Define S, which was a good case, which we also reviewed. And this is just, you know, we talked about it before, how, you know, you review so many cases and some of them, they're not bad, but they're not the best quality. And when it comes to Fractal Design stuff, just like feeling the case and picking it up, it's just such good quality. That's one of the big things about this case. It's just a quality, well-made case. So they already have that. Their internal design has not changed all that much. They made a few adjustments, but nothing really crazy. The big thing with this is, of course, like every new case, is you have that tempered glass side panel. And they've done something really cool, which I'm a huge fan of, is that, you know, most tempered glass side panels are just a panel of tempered glass. That's what they are. What they've done here is they've taken a normal side panel, cut it almost all the way out, and then fused the tempered glass on top of it. So you can actually open the side panel like a normal case with thumb screws. It makes it
and
so...
It notches in on the front and everything then?
Yeah, it notches in on the front. It's just like a normal side panel. And it's just so much easier to work with. One, you have two less screws because most of the side panels have four screws. Two, you don't have to worry about like setting the panel down weirdly and cracking it. I've seen that happen a lot. And you don't have to worry about when you put in those screws, some of the ones that are designed badly, if you tighten that screw too much, you're going to crack the circle that's cut out for the screw in the tempered glass panel. I've seen that happen as well. So you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. And you don't have screws on the side in your side panel, making it just look ugly, I think.
I think the posts just stand out and they break up the look of your case.
Yeah, so I really like that. And it just makes it feel better. It makes it feel better to hold and everything like that. So I really like that. That was one of their new additions to this case. They've also redesigned the Module Vent system at the top. So the top of the case is completely closed off, but if you press down on it, or you don't press down on it, there's a button on the back of the case, and it pops open, and it allows you to remove a cooling bracket where you can install water cooling, you can install your fans and all of that. And for people who are doing like custom loop water cooling, it actually has a fill port built into it. So what their idea with that is that you can fill your loop without even having to open your case, really. You just pop that top off, which seems like it would be a good idea.
Semi-helpful.
Yeah, there's a lot of water cooling space in this. You know, you can fit, I believe, a 420 in the front, a 480 in the top.
You really get a 420 in the front?
Well, 360, I'm sorry.
So the PSU shroud looks like it normally goes all the way front to back. Does, like, part of it remove then?
Yeah, the front part removes, so you can do, like, a push-pull if you wanted to. You'd have more than enough room to do that.
How much room does that provide? How thick of a radiator can you fit in there?
I'm not specifically sure, but it comes all the way up to the motherboard tray.
It's quite wide, actually.
You can fit probably the thickest, you know, some of the thickest radiators
out there.
In a push-pull, because it's just, you know, you have that much space. It's just, I think the biggest thing with this case, the reason why I really liked it, it's just designed so well. It's designed well for a builder. They've thought it out. All the little things that might have been slightly wrong with the original version have been corrected. They've added new things. All of the filters are nylon, a nylon filter instead of plastic, which they say provides 2 times better airflow, which is just like a nice little thing that's going to obviously help out. We had installed a very large motherboard in this without any issues. It's just, it has an internal USB 3.1 Gen 2 connection on it. You'll see a lot of cases that are coming out towards the end of the year have that on it. You know, it just, it was just such a joy, and like, it was so nice to build in this because I really had not a single issue. The back of the motherboard tray has a 9-port fan hub. That's easily accessible, and you can connect all your fans that way. Obviously, there is more than enough room to route all of your cables. They provide 2 Velcro tie downs, plus I believe there's 11 tie down spots, and they include zip ties, so cable management shouldn't be an issue with this. You can fit very large power supplies in this. You can fit the longest graphics cards in this. It's just a good case. I really couldn't find anything to fault them with on this. You have room for 5 hard drives plus 2 more if you wanted to install them on the PSU shroud. It's just, like I said, it's just a good case, easy to build in, can fit a lot of big parts, and it's really well made, and it looks great. We had it with a board that had some RGBs on it with RGB memory and all that, and our system build just looked awesome, I thought. It's good. Just a good follow-up, kind of bringing the Define S into the modern era with the tempered glass and some of the other things that they've done, you know, to just make it just really, really good. I really enjoyed building with this case.
What is this black box that's from the back of the motherboard tray? Maybe it's a hard drive container.
Oh, okay, yeah. So the big black.
It says Fractal Design on the back.
Okay, yeah. So those are the hard drive trays. They support both 2.5-inch and 3.5-inch. Okay. So you can do three drives in there, and they come out and they're easy to install. And the big issue with their previous design is that there was not a lot of sound dampening on them. So these have been upgraded with sound dampening properties with the grommets that go around for the 3.5-inch hard drive installation. So it's just a nice little upgrade, and it's nice to install them outside of the case, obviously. You have the thumb screw at the top that allows you to just pull them off. And if you're not using them, you can completely pull them off as well.
I just wasn't sure what exactly we were looking at
there. Yeah, so typically in a case design like this, because most cases are designed pretty much the same, what you would see is in front of the power supply, like sitting in front of the power supply, would be a little cage that had 2 or 3 3.5-inch hard drive spots. Mm-hmm. What they've done is they put them where they are here, so you can fit large radiators and water cooling components and things like that. You know what I mean? And I think it's a win-win, because those other cases, if you want to do that really, you know, nice water cooling build, you lose those drive spots essentially, because you would just remove the cage and it can't be put anywhere else in the system.
Yep. And that's pretty big downside.
Yeah. So with this, I think they've done it correctly. Again, there's sound dampening material on the rear side panel, on the front of the case, and on that top section as well. So it's a very quiet system too. You know, and you can pop that top off if you're using, you know, top cooling as well. So I like it. Sweet. And it's not super expensive either. The MSRP is $149.99. I don't know if it's different since we launched the review, because it wasn't available yet. I can check if it's on Amazon. Yet, but it wasn't on Amazon when we launched the review.
Yeah, I haven't seen any.
Yeah, so it's supposed to be 149, which I don't think is bad for this type of case. Supports EATX, supports large graphics cards, has tempered glass side panel, has the sound dampening properties. It's really well built, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it seems like a pretty decent price.
Yeah.
It's not the biggest.
No, it's not the biggest case by any means. And it's technically, if you wanted to do like a EATX with all of the graphics slots filled, you only have 7 expansion slots here. So that's something you think about. So it's not, technically it's not a full tower. It's a mid tower by those standards, but it does come with 3 fans too. I wanted to mention, a lot of cases have 2, you have 3 here and they're good fans. You have 2 in the front and 1 in the back and they're 140s, which is nice. So
yeah, nice and quiet.
Yeah. So I liked it. Like I said, just a great case. One of my favorite products I think I reviewed this year, cause it was just, I couldn't find a single thing wrong with it, which a lot of times we nitpick and find things. So it's just a good, you know, like good product. So on the complete opposite side of the spectrum, I took a look at an iPhone case because for as expensive as phones are these days, you want to protect them. It's just, I don't know how people don't have cases on their phones. Even just to replace the screen that would break or something is just not worth it when you can pick up a case and you're just set. So I took a look at the Chameleon case from Moshi, and it's one of those cases that has the kickstand on the back, which is incredibly convenient. So many times I'm just sitting there, like, you know, eating lunch or something, and I just want to have, I want to watch YouTube or something, you know what I mean? And I can just set it up and watch it. It also allows me to, the kickstand not only works in landscape mode, but it works in portrait mode as well. So if I want to FaceTime with somebody, I can just set my phone down. I don't have to be holding it up, you know, that just gets annoying after a while. And I can also have the phone sitting up, like while I'm at my desk, as a stand, so I can see my notifications and messages and all that stuff. As far as protection, this is relatively good protection. I've dropped the phone multiple times since I've had the case on. No damage to my phone at all. It covers the top part of the phone, which so many of the cheaper cases don't. So when you actually drop your phone, it will hit one of the corners of your phone, not the case. In this case, it doesn't, because it covers that section. It's a good case, one that I would recommend if you're looking for a case that has that, you know, pop out stand. And it looks cool. I think the biggest thing with any phone case, you don't want it to look stupid. And this looks pretty cool as well. So,
probably more important than anything else.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think the biggest thing is it looks good. It protects the phone and it has the kick out stand, which I actually use more than I thought I would. So, I couldn't imagine having a phone without it now.
Sweet.
So moving on from that, we'll go to Case Mod Friday, and we have a build that I think you will like because there's a lot of water cooling in it. It's called Rainbow Revenge, and I don't know that guy's name. Psycho Lunatic Mod, I think it's how you say it. Psycho Lunatic Mod, and it's in one of my favorite cases that has ever been released, is the Inwin Total Toe 2.0, which was released 3 or 4 years ago. The all glass case that just looks sick, and there's just a ton of water cooling in it. Very cool rear reservoir that he's basically taken the rear of the system and built a reservoir that covers almost the entire, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how it cuts short.
Yeah, I don't know if that was a design thing or what that was, but besides that, I think it's cool. And he has like the Patriot Viper logo in there, which I think is cool. Then he has another, I don't know if that is that, I guess that's a reservoir right there, with it's the RG logo.
You can see it filled all the way up.
So that is really cool as well. A lot of RGBs in this, and I think honestly I think this case is kind of hard to mod or hard to build a system out of, because it's so good.
It's hard to build a clean system, man. That's for sure.
Yeah. It looks like the mid plate too is at least, I don't think it's,
it's got a fitting going into it, but
I think that just goes to the bottom, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I would guess his pump is right underneath that, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe not, but I would think maybe not. It's really clean, actually, is what I would describe it as. For such a, like, for so much RGB, it's like, it's perfectly clean. I feel like it doesn't overdo it at all.
Yeah.
Even though it's completely RGB, like, everything is RGB. These panels are all, they all seem to be backlit with multiple addressable RGBs as well. I'm not sure what strips he's using, but they're doing the job.
Yeah.
And it just, the effect of all those panels, well, it's not all the panels, it's all these sandwich reservoirs. These double-sided acrylic reservoirs that, like, they just kind of, like, frame the whole thing, and it carries the light so well.
Yeah, it's a really good job. I'm not a fan of, like, the crazy overdone RGB, but
yeah, no,
this just looks good. I'm a huge fan of that rear reservoir. I just think it looks cool.
Yeah.
We don't see a whole lot of those.
Yeah, the only thing I don't like is the etching in the midplate acrylic. It's got all of the, like, company names, which are, I'm sure they're sponsors. And you see this from a lot of, is this guy Ty? I'm not sure. You see it from a lot. I want to say they're Thai modders that will.
Yeah.
It's almost like how, like,
race cars,
tuner cars used to be. Yeah, and I think it's just the least classy thing you can do.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's fantastic.
Yeah. So yeah, it's really good. He has that Rampage block, the mono block on there, which looks good. He has the Patriot Viper RGB, which we reviewed, and that's a really great kit as well. So lots of cool stuff in this one.
Nice.
The case is amazing. You don't even really get to see any of it because it's just like the RGB kind of just takes over.
Yeah, it's kind of less of a case mod, and it's more of the traditional system mod where everything interior of the case is modded.
Yeah.
Actually, kind of aside from... It looks like it's just a standard back panel still, but basically everything inside is modded.
And yeah.
It's kind of cool. It's kind of how we, it's kind of like the mid-level modder thing, I guess. Like, it's not altering the exterior and, like, really having to go out there for it, but it's, like, changing everything else on the inside.
Yeah, yeah. I like it. Cool. I think it looks good. Definitely check it out. And we have a link to his Facebook, so you can check out his other stuff as well. So it is semi the beginning of the month. It is the 9th now, but that means that we have our worst PC setups article, and this is where we go out and find some of the worst PC setups, whether somebody's moving or they're just in a situation where they can't have a full setup, or they're just not clean people. A lot of them we found recently is, like, a lot of people, like, at jobs, they have, like, a PC setup to do certain thing, and this PC's been there forever. And some of those are really funny as well. So not really much to talk about with this article. It's just really funny to see some of these setups, especially when people are, like, moving, but they want their PC set up to game or whatever it may be, or, you know, it's just really, really funny. So
yeah,
definitely check out that post. It's just, you definitely get a laugh, and you can definitely feel better about your PC setup, at least hopefully after seeing all of these. So
yeah, you kind of click through and you just kind of,
Yeah.
Interesting. All right.
Yes.
Good stuff.
Yes. So
this is such a long-lived article series that we have too. Like, it's amazing how long this has been going on.
Yeah, it's just surprising that people still live that.
Still
way,
pop up, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So we also have a contest going on. There's a few more days left, so try to get in on this as soon as you can. But we're giving away three of the Reven Twyla RGB strips. We reviewed these and they're just really good. Just, you know, simple 4-pin RGB strips that help you light up your system, and we're giving them away, and it's super easy to enter. We will have the link to the contest page in the show notes so you guys can get in and get on that. Couple days left, so. So yeah, and that brings us to the big announcements for this week, and it's all Intel this week, so
like all,
yeah, Intel. All Intel. So the big announcement, Intel held an event and they officially announced the Core i9 9900K and their ninth generation mainstream desktop processors. And it's, we knew a lot of information on these. It's just like Intel basically confirmed it, and we have some newer information. So just to start out, the flagship, of course, is the Core i9-9900K, and that's an 8-core, 16-thread processor with hyper-threading. It's the first 5 gigahertz processor from Intel, so I believe it has a 3.6 gigahertz base clock and it boosts up to 5 gigahertz.
Correct.
So pretty impressive processor. We talked about the packaging, which I think is super cool. The weird crazy sided object. I don't know what you want to call it.
Dodecahedron.
Yeah.
It's something approximately that.
Yeah. So you have that, which looks really, really cool. The big news for especially for overclockers is that the entire ninth generation lineup will have soldered TIM. So you should get better temperatures just overall. And then with overclocking, you should be able to at least push this a little bit higher because you'll have better thermals with that. So it's good that you know, AMD did it with Ryzen, and now finally Intel's finally putting the solder back on there.
Yeah, finally back on the right track.
Yeah. So that is definitely a step in the right direction. We definitely like that. Then next down the line, you have the Core i7-9700K, and that's 8-core, 8-thread, so no hyper-threading there. Very similar clocks. You have a 3.6 gigahertz base, and it will boost up to 4.9 gigahertz. And then finally, rounding things out, you have the Core i5-9600K, and that's a 6-core, 6-thread chip with a base clock of 3.7 gigahertz and will boost up to 4.6 gigahertz. All of the chips are 95-watt TDP, and they'll be available October 19th. The price on the flagship is, at least Intel's MSRP, is $488. A lot of people are saying it's $499. It's listed on Newegg for $580 for some reason. At least it was yesterday. It was. I don't know what it is now on Newegg.
Whatever the case, it's far too much money for a mainstream part.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the 2700X, which I'm looking up on Amazon right now, the Ryzen 7 2700X with a cooler is $299, so $300.
Yep.
You're looking at almost $200 more expensive. That
exact same core count.
Exact same core counts. Well, it does boost higher. And Intel did say that it does beat the 2700X. Not sure by how much. And it's, again, those are internal tests and things like that.
I kind of don't doubt that it beats it. It kind of has to, right?
Yeah, like it has to. And I mean, the 2700X only boosts up to 4.3 gigahertz. So if you're boosting up to 5, even if it's on, I believe the boost is only half core. With everything else, I forget what the actual things are.
Right.
But still, I mean, it makes sense for that. I mean, to happen. But I mean, if you
what, just $200 faster,
$200 faster.
It's almost the second 2700X.
Yeah, we have the chip here, so we'll be testing it over the next week and a half. For the launch date. So I can't talk about performance, but we will be testing it against a Ryzen 7 2700X, so we'll have those results for you. But I mean, $200 is a big deal. I mean, $200 is a much better memory kit, and I mean, it is a much better GPU. And that's the difference between a 1080p and 1440p monitor. I mean, there's a lot of things that $200 can go into.
That's not just like minor differences anymore. That's a significant price difference.
Yeah.
They have to truly believe that this thing is just so much better. Honestly, whatever you want to round it to, it's about $500, right? That is like right into high-end desktop, lowest performing part range.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how much the Red Rippers are.
Yeah. Probably the same price.
Threadripper 1950X, a 16-core, 32 thread. That's obviously first gen, but that's $698. Yeah. The 2990WX is $1,700. There's not a whole lot of Threadripper parts actually listed on Amazon for some reason.
But it's right in the range that
High-end
desktop has traditionally started for Intel. And it does that without the express lanes. It does that without the extra features that you get from high-end desktop. I suppose, I think we've got, we don't have an article about it. I think it just says it in this one. It is supposed to be much better at gaming than high-end desktop parts traditionally have been.
Yeah, well, because you have that high boost clock.
That's heavily dependent on how highly threaded the game is, really.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. 5 gigahertz is great, right? That's significant. I hadn't realized that this was the first to hold 5 gigahertz, but man, $500 is... This is Intel like splintering everything more, I think.
I agree.
Like they created a new category processor part and slotted in a mainstream part, quote mainstream. I don't know.
I mean, I don't. I just don't. About it before. I mean, AMD is making 8-core, 16-thread mainstream. But
which
this
is fantastic.
This doesn't have a mainstream price. I mean, $500 is expensive for a CPU like that. It's just not.
Because Intel was planning on selling this level of tech for a lot more money doesn't mean they get to anymore.
I mean,
AMD changed the game, boys.
I mean, I could even see $100 difference. But I mean, $200 is a big deal. And you have to, again, the AMD part comes with the CPU cooler, which is a good cooler. We tested it.
Good cooler. They absolutely are.
I don't think you're losing a lot of value.
$400 would have been the max. I think this would have been like justifiable max.
I mean, we might see some price adjustment, but
maybe.
Yeah.
Hopefully sales are just terrible and then it plummets. But I mean, what the 9700K is $400, isn't that?
I believe so. Yes.
Which is like. Okay, you've gone 60 over your traditional price now for that part.
Yeah.
I could have seen going 60 up to the 9900K.
So
they've inflated everything.
On Newegg, the 9900K for pre-order, you can pre-order it for $579. The 9700 is $419 and the i5 9600 is $279.
Are they planning on a lack of availability? Is that what that pricing tells me?
I have no clue. Because, again, even Intel's pricing in their release is $488.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I mean, traditionally, when Intel launches mainstream, they... it shouldn't be a tradition, but they don't have enough parts available.
Yeah, so...
At least in some market, they don't. So, it sounds to me like Newegg is already planning on not having a large quantity, and they're going to cash in like straight away.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see how this part does against obviously second generation Ryzen, specifically the 2700X. And you have to think too that, again, we've talked about it, that AMD has a 2800X just sitting around that they're waiting to release to.
Drop that thing in at $350 below Intel to pieces.
Yeah, so
I just, what are they thinking? What is Intel thinking with this pricing? Like,
I have no clue.
You cannot afford to price yourself out of sales right now.
Yeah.
Like, how long are you going to live on the cash that you have stockpiled, Intel, before you start like making parts that are going to make you money again?
Yeah, we'll have to see the performance. I mean, if it's crazy, which I don't assume it would be, because again, they're both still eight core, 16 thread parts. You know, I can't see the performance justifying the $200 difference.
No, I'm going to say it's going to be 10 to 15% faster.
Yeah. So
if. Yeah. 10 to 15% at let's call them their natural clocks without any overclocking.
So you'll see October 19th is the global availability date, and that's when all the reviews will come out as well. So
Okay. 10 days.
Yeah. So definitely, you know, keep all that in mind, and we will have a review of the chip, our review. So definitely cool. Stay tuned for that. And
we'll got one sitting next to you.
I do. They did not send it in the cool packaging because I'm kind of upset about that.
Maybe they were like, I don't think Bob can pronounce the name, so we
just I definitely cannot. So, but yeah, that'd be just a cool thing to have sitting on the shelf. You know what I mean? I just think it looks really cool.
Absolutely, yeah. If it doesn't have LEDs in it, I'm gonna be pissed. come on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm paying almost $500 for this thing. I better get
seriously. It better come with a $100 check in it.
Yeah. So, so talking about the 9900K. During Intel's event, they did an overclocking presentation, and they were able to overclock the i9-9900K to 6.9 gigahertz on all of the cores. This was obviously done with the help of LN2. The V-core was pumped all the way up to 1.7, which
is... Yeah, that's crazy.
Very, very high. But still...
What was the base V-core?
I don't
remember if the the TDP, and that's it.
Yeah, the base is usually like 1.3.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Well, could be a little lower. But so I mean from going to from 3.6 to 3.7, which is the base clock, all the way up to 6.9, and that's across all of the cores. That's not just a one core overclock, which we see a lot of. That's pretty impressive, I would say.
Yeah. Almost for sure this is hyper-threading disabled though.
Probably.
But still, it's
one thing. The overclocker that did this was called Splave.
I never heard of him.
Yeah. And he said some samples could even go up to 7.1 across all cores. And he made a comment that with water cooling, you should be able to achieve 5.3 gigahertz around 1.4 V core on all cores, which is pretty awesome. Running a system like that on an AIO, it'd be nice to have 5 gigahertz across all 8 cores on an AIO. Hopefully that's possible. We'll see.
Yeah, just setting your base clock at the boost clock.
Yep.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah, so we'll, like I said, we'll be testing the chip over the next 10 days, and it'd be, we'll let you know kind of how it does on that. Yeah. So that moves us to high-end desktop. So this event was not just for the mainstream desktop. Intel announced their 9th generation Core X family, and these are for the LGA 2066 socket and the current X299 chipsets. These are all built on the 14-nanometer plus node, and they're pretty much almost the same as... the previous generation, just with some a bump in frequency. The flagship will be 18 cores, so you're not going to see any high core counts with this like we've seen with Threadripper. It's the Core i9-9980XE. That's a 18-core flagship part. Has a base clock of 3 gigahertz, and with the new, you know, the Turbo Boost 3.0, it will go up to 4.5 gigahertz. 24.75 cache, fully unlocked, and this platform will have up to 68 PCI Express 3.0 lanes, which is nice, and this will retail, their MSRP on the flagship is just about the same pricing as the previous, which is $1,979, just about $2,000 for that part. So not anything super exciting for this platform. They've also have soldered TIM on all of these, which is a nice upgrade. It's kind of underwhelming. I mean, you go from an 8-core to an 18-core in this, all, you know, and you start from 589 for the 8-core, and you go
steps
all the way
up
to
really
two,
quick.
Yeah, you go all the way up to $2,000 for the 18-core. You know, you're getting 44 PCI Express lanes from the CPU, 24 from the PCH. These will work with current X299 boards with a BIOS update, but you will see new X299 boards. We'll talk about one today, but you'll see new kind of second generation X299 boards come out. It's a nice refresh. But it's, I mean, the problems that Intel's having with their fabs kind of makes it so they have to, they're not working on anything on any lower nodes. So it's just
kind of boring.
Yeah. So you're kind of just stuck there. If you're looking to get into high-end desktop on the Intel side, the X299 platform's great. And, you know, this is a nice...
It's very mature at this point.
Yeah, it's mature. It's a nice... you know, all of these newer chips will perform a little bit better than the previous generation. But it's just not, you know, it's not super exciting. What we will talk about next is semi-exciting. I'm sure a lot of you remember the 5 gigahertz 28-core chip that was shown off of Computex. They're making it official. While it's not the exact same chip, it's pretty similar. It will be the Xeon W-3175X, and this is kind of marketed towards the high-end professional workstation-type person. It has 28 cores, 56 threads, a base core of 3.1 gigahertz, and it will boost all the way up to 4.3 gigahertz. This platform has 68 PCI Express lanes, so 44 on the CPU, 24 on the chipset, and it supports 6-channel DDR4 2666 memory. So technically, you could load a system up with 512 gigabytes of memory if you wanted to. You know,
What kind of clocks can we expect on phase change cooling, Bob?
Exactly, right? this is for the new LGA 3647. So again, Intel is forking their high-end desktop segment, I guess, into the LGA 2066 up to 18 core and this LGA 3647 for anything above that, I'm guessing. This won't be available till December. As we talked about before, this is just confusing because it's like, okay, high-end desktop, it should be just be one thing. Why are you building, you know, it's just confusing to the consumer.
It's semi-confusing to the professional.
Yeah. I mean,
let alone the person that's just walking out to buy something.
Yeah. I mean, awesome, right? I can't imagine what this will cost. No pricing has been released. I mean, if the 18 core is $2,000, the 28 core is $4,000?
$6,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be expensive.
It's not going to scale. It's Intel. It'll be like $6,000.
Yeah, so it's going to be very, very expensive. The only thing I'm excited about, which we'll talk about, we can just skip to that, actually, is that... there will be boards for this new LGA 20 or what is it? I'm already confused. The LGA 3647, there will be new boards Asus and Gigabyte will have boards at launch for this. Asus has already announced one of theirs, which is the ROG Dominus Extreme. And this thing is sick. It's a massive board, which it needs to be to fit that socket. Because think of that socket as the TR4. It's just about as big as the... It might be the same size as the TR4, the Threadripper socket. It has to be. You know,
it's like two sockets.
Yeah. And Asus has pulled out all the stops with this. You have four... PCI Express 3.0 X16 slots with the metal shielding. All of the armor that's on this board that you see, that's actually aluminum. Typically on the boards, it's steel. So this is actually all brushed aluminum on there, which is nice. You have dip switches for all of the... There's two sets of dip switches, so I'm not actually sure which does what, but...
You can probably, like, shut down memory lanes.
Yeah, I think one is for memory lanes and the other is for... your PCI Express slots. You have all kinds of different things. A ton of fan headers. Like, there's 6 fan headers right by those dip switches, plus another 6 at the bottom.
Yeah.
You have an integrated fan on the PCH there. There, as far as power, you get 224 pin ATX plus One for the socket. 1, 2, 3 8-pin, 2 6-pin, and a 4-pin. These processors will be 265-watt TDPs, so nice. Need a lot of power there. And this board's just amazing. This is like the ultimate board. Like everything is thrown on this board that you can imagine. I can't imagine. I mean, if you think about it too, $4,000 to $6,000 processor, this board is at least going to be $1,000. And if you're going to load it out with memory, you're looking at another $600 to $800 in memory. I mean, you're getting close to 10 without even putting GPUs in this.
And you're going to put another, 1,200 a piece, probably another $4,800 in GPU.
Yeah. And then you need, probably dual power supply. 1600 watts.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know,
don't forget your NVMEs.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Oh, speaking of, where are we slotting those in? You think the shield comes off?
I would think the shield comes off, but I'm not sure.
It looks pretty solidly on there.
Yeah.
So, usually we see like the individually removable.
Yeah.
Shields. Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if there are. I don't know.
It's got to, right?
Yeah, they do have those, what are they called? The DIM2 slots.
DIM.2s?
Yeah, the DIM.2s are basically they look like a memory slot, but they come with a little adapter that you mount an M.2 on them, so that could be where they're going. It has RGB headers.
Does it really?
It has two RGB headers.
That seems like something you don't need for this board because, I mean, it'll probably happen, but... Like, this is a professional's board.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You don't even, there's guys that will do it as their, like, daily driver because they have superfluous amounts of cash.
Yeah.
RGBs, okay.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's RGBs on it, do you think? It's pretty dark theme. I almost think they wouldn't.
Maybe... I don't know.
It's gorgeous as it is, I think.
Oh, it's a great board. If you're a motherboard geek like me, you'll love this board. There's just so much on it. Actually, there's four RGB headers. There's two at the bottom and two at the top. nice. But yeah, I mean, this board has everything that you would want for any type of connectivity, everything. It just has, Wi-Fi too, because you can see the little thingy sticking out for it.
So it's regular ATX plus...
Oh, there is
another 3 inches aboard, 4 inches.
Yeah, I don't know. It's big massive. Though. So there's actually an OLED display on it as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it has everything. It's going to be at least $1,000, at least.
Yeah,
so Asus announced that, and they also announced a second generation X299 board in their Prime X299 Deluxe 2. I like this design on the Prime, just like the overall look of it looks great.
Yeah, it looks cool.
It has the little display, that's another OLED display there that it's showing clock speed, so I'm assuming it will show clock speed and maybe some other stuff you can display there.
Oh, no, shit.
But like the Prime series from Asus is so good. It's like just solid. It's just really good.
Yeah.
And this board has 3 PCI Express 3.0 slots on there. You have at least probably 3 M.2s, if not 2, because the top one might be covered where the OLED display is. Lots of like RGBs on the PCH heatsink and on the I/O cover. Looks like pretty hefty design in the VRM cooling there, that looks pretty intense as well. It just looks like a good board. It looks like a good X299 board.
I wonder what the power delivery is on it.
I can't tell. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 phase.
Wow.
Looks like 12 phase.
I miss the 24 phase days. I really do.
but it also
this is so classy though, like
it's nice
I think
board.
This is like this is the quintessential high-end desktop board, I think, like as far as like the class and the aesthetic of it, and like obviously it's got the correct feature set, but like it's not over the top, but it's everything that like an enthusiast would want still, I think.
Like I said, Asus does a great job on their Prime series, so yeah. excited to see this. And again, we should see some more like second generation X299 boards coming out from different motherboard manufacturers. And talking about that, with the launch of the ninth generation mainstream parts, we have Z390. They're launched from every company launched theirs. We can talk about a few of them. We'll just go down our list here. So first we have Asus, and the one that you said you liked is the ROG Strix Z390E Gaming. Yeah. I like that board. I like the Strix. I just like Strix in general. Again, it's just a solid board. It has your two M.2s on the board. It looks pretty. It looks like just sexy. All of these boards have the integrated I/O shield, so you don't have to deal with putting your I/O shield in and then the board in. It just makes it so much easier.
It gives them the option to clean the look of it up as well, I think.
Yeah. You have the Supreme FX audio on that. It's just a good looking board, and it's just like this Strix, like the Dash E gaming boards have been really popular. And yeah, so it looks really good. My favorite Asus one actually is the Tiny Strix. It is the ROG Strix Z390i Gaming. I'm a huge fan of the Mini ITX and just how small. But they make this look sick. They still had enough room to do a full M.2 cover on the front of the board, which looks awesome. Super tiny, but just probably like. Go ahead.
They built it up, that's for sure.
Yeah, they built it up, and it has the RGBs on the end, which I have an Asus board that does that, and that just looks awesome for underglow. And it doesn't go over the edge with RGBs on it. So that's the one that I like from Asus. The MSI boards, there's a lot of them as well. Obviously, my favorite is the Meg Z390 Godlike. We were talking about this before we started the podcast. I mean, this is the most, so far at least I've seen, the most overdone Z390 board that's out there. This thing has everything. It has three M.2s plus a card that has two more M.2s on it. It comes with a streaming card that we don't know that much about. It comes with that. It comes with the external Wi-Fi. Yeah, it comes with the external Wi-Fi antenna. Tons of RGBs on it. Four PCI Express 3.0s, X16 slots. I like the design. You said you weren't that big of a fan of the design.
I think it kind of falls in line with like the Maximus formula, where it's just like just a ton of almost, it's not plastic, but it kind of looks plasticky just thrown on it.
Yeah.
Some of it probably is plastic. I don't know. It just kind of like, it's kind of a mess to me in a way.
Yeah, it's just over the top. It's like, this is like the over the top board. Yeah. It has this dial on it that's for like instant overclocking. We said it's kind of redundant, but yeah. That's on there. It has the dual, it's called the Killer Extend, which is two Killer E2500 Ethernet LAN connectors and a Killer 1550 Wi-Fi AC adapter. it comes with its own DAC, so it's an extreme audio DAC, all kinds of stuff. And this is just completely overdone. This board is going to be, what, 600? I think.
Yeah, 600, 599 right now on Newegg.
Yeah, 599 on Newegg. So this is going to be one of the most expensive boards out there. I would love to have it, but there's a lot of other boards and a lot of other, just even MSI boards in general that would be fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we'll move on from MSI to ASRock. And the one interesting thing about the ASRock boards, the ones that we're talking about, is that they've transitioned their Phantom Gaming, which they launched with their graphics cards, with the AMD cards earlier this year. Phantom Gaming will now be their gaming brand for their motherboards. So I guess they're moving away from the Fatality branded stuff.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is that no more? Not a thing?
I'm not sure, because I haven't really looked at their whole Z390 page, but I assume so. This is what, you know, I think a lot of these brands, they want something that they can look, you know, we know Asus is ROG, we know Gigabyte as Aorus, you know what I mean? We know the gaming
brands. Yeah. I thought Vitality fit. I thought that fit in there well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that they just want a across graphics and motherboards. They want the same Phantom Gaming type thing. The boards here, they all look really good. You have the, you know, Gaming 9, Gaming 6, the Phantom Gaming SLI AC, the Phantom Gaming SLI Gaming 4, and the Phantom Gaming, they have a ITX board as well. The big thing is that these will have 2.5 gig LAN, which is nice. A nice little upgrade over previous generation boards. They look good. Not over the top like some of the Asus and MSI boards, mm-hmm. but they do look really good there. NZXT will have their Z390 board, which will be the N7 Z390. You know, we saw the Z370 board. I like the look. It looks cool, but compared to everything else, it just kind of looks bland.
Basic.
The only thing that is like the saving grace is this does look good inside of an NZXT case. Like, it does.
Like, super, super good, yeah.
Yeah.
And it allows for a lot more modding than the other boards because all of the armor comes right off.
Yeah.
And you can customize that. But it doesn't, it just lacks a lot of the built-in RGB effects.
Built-in RGB effects, just like the design. Because like I said, it's a flat, plain design. Yeah. And like other boards.
It's also a $280 board for what is essentially, who is it that built these?
Is it BioStar? ECS.
No, ECS. Which is essentially just a basic ECS board. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Worth testing, I guess. See if they've made improvements over the last gen, but I kind of have a feeling that it's going to be basically the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but it's good to see them continue it. I think that's a big deal for them. So moving to Gigabyte, they announced their Aorus boards. With the flagship being the Z390 Aorus Master. Yes. I think these look good. You said you really like the look of these. I think Aorus does a really good job in overall looks of their boards. Like, when they announced their first Aorus boards, they were just really, really good looking.
They drew heavy on the G7 boards.
Yeah.
Or the gaming series boards. And so they had a really solid base to begin with, right?
Yeah. So yeah, they're really good. I mean, obviously you're gonna like the most expensive one, probably. The Z390 Aorus Master. It looks good. You know, it's gonna be overloaded with RGBs. That's kind of the Aorus thing. I really like how the rear IO cover and the heat sinks up there kind of look like they kind of go together, and then you'll have some RGB lighting in there. I think that looks really cool. Yeah.
I like the window into the fins of the heat sink. I think that looks good.
Yeah, that's really cool as well. I like that. It will have three M.2s on it, all with the M.2 covers. All these boards look good. Like, mainstream, you get a lot of boards, and they're fairly all really good. In my opinion. Yeah. So you have that from Aorus. And then EVGA.
The one thing this lacks, the Aorus, though, to point out, lacking from the MSI board that we were talking about, it does not support the four-way SLI. So it just does not have the lanes.
Yeah, it just doesn't have the lanes, which most of these mainstream boards should not.
Right. A lot cheaper, though.
Yeah, oh yeah. A lot cheaper. I think it's $289 for the highest end Aorus board. EVGA has announced two boards, the Z390 Dark and the Z390 for the win. The more interesting one is the Dark board.
I like it
is very different. They've gone, like, just their whole design is very, very different from a lot of other boards. This is really designed as an overclockers board. If you look at the CPU socket, it's completely different from everyone else's. There's only two memory slots on it.
It's obviously it's rotated 90 degrees, so it's horizontal versus the normal vertical socket.
Yeah.
Did they just go two DIMMs because it really is specifically overclocking?
From what I've heard, yes, because I just think it's just designed that way. Because it has a 17-phase VRM on it. I mean, that's very high for mainstream. Most of them were seeing 8 and 12, so 17.
It looks like a tool. Like, this looks like something that, like, is meant to be used, honestly, looking at it.
Yeah. They've done this on a couple previous boards, but, like, the power connections are all at a 90-degree angle out from the board, and it's cut out like that.
I don't like the notch. I don't mind the angle. I don't like the notch. I've not liked that at all.
Yeah. I'm not...
I think they have to do that, though, I think, to make it so that it will fit with the pass-throughs.
Yeah,
When you put them at a 90-degree like that.
I think that's the reason. I really like they have two M.2s right next to each other, which is pretty cool. I like that.
It's just the gold traces, the gold visible traces, gold on the edge.
Yeah.
With the black. If I was going to buy one of these boards, it might actually be this board, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, it is an overclockers board for sure. It's just a different looking board. And I commend EVGA for kind of not conforming to what everybody else is doing.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people talk that this is like built for LN2, and I kind of scratched my head at first. Like, what do you mean? Like, what about rotating the socket makes it like more capable of having a like symmetrical device attached to it? But I guess it allows you to bring the pot in from the right hand side instead of like from the top.
Yeah.
Because traditionally I'm right handed, or, you know, if you're left handed, but coming in from the right, like, you don't have to worry about like catching your memory or anything when you're doing that.
And I mean, even moving it in from the top, you typically have your VRM heatsink there as well.
Yeah.
Which could get in the way, which is completely gone. Not gone, but I mean, it's moved.
Well, it's all off to the left.
Yeah, it's all off to the left there. So it's like just designed differently.
Man, does that that integrates so well into the IO.
Oh, I know.
Is it not? That's seamless.
Yeah, very seamless.
Oh, man. I hope, I want to see this in person.
Yeah,
I see this board.
EVGA had that, and that's all the ones that weren't recovering. So a lot of motherboards, a lot to choose from. Obviously, besides Ryzen, I mean, Intel is the most popular mainstream desktop part still. So the boards that are out there, there's so many to choose from. And you'll see a lot of reviews come out on the...
I think the boards still look better. What do you think?
The Intel boards? Yes. Yeah, I still think they look better than the Ryzen boards. The second-gen Ryzen boards are really good, though. They look really good and everything, but it's just like the Intel boards, just they pack so much more in, and I just think that they're done better.
Which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because it's the same companies. You want to say like, oh well, they've been like better for longer, but like it's the same companies making the boards for both sockets. So what's the difference? I don't know, but
yeah. But I think AMD made a big push for motherboard manufacturers, especially with first gen Ryzen, to like really be like, hey, like make a good looking board. And the second generation has gotten better. And I think just from going, especially with this big price difference and a lot more people building Ryzen systems, you're going to see that type of thing.
Yeah, I hope we see it get this deep.
Yeah.
Like this launch is not, to me, it's like not a big Intel launch, kind of. It is and it isn't. Like we've obviously not dropped die size or anything with this launch.
Yeah.
So like it's just an in-between launch to me, and yet we've seen, this is a deep selection of motherboards for launch day.
Oh yeah.
Like deep. So like, and to not see that happen for the AMD parts is kind of like, come on guys.
Yeah, it's you know, it, I think with the you know, we'll see the Zen 2 will be real big for AMD. So
Zen 2 is going to be probably like the make or break.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we'll see that and kind of see if we see the same type of parity with the other boards. Hopefully we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So moving, or actually, it does have to do with motherboards, but a really interesting story came out at the end of last week is that it was by, I forget who came, the actual Bloomberg found this out, or at least had been researching about it, is that the Chinese government has been using Supermicro and their motherboards to spy on the United States. Supermicro, if you haven't heard of them, they make boards for Xeons, a lot of server motherboards and things like that, that have that are used in major corporations all around the world, not just the United States. And according to Bloomberg, that these boards have a chip on it. It's a hardware-based spyware that's on the board that is allowing China to spy on major U.S. companies. And some of those include, the two big ones were Amazon Web Services and Apple. Since this time, both Amazon and Apple have said that there was no security breach. And, you know, the Apple response said that, you know, that the Bloomberg reporters, they're not open to the possibility that their sources might be wrong or misinformed. You know,
are these deflections that like you would expect to see no matter what though?
Not completely. I mean, I think it would be a big deal. I think that if there was a hard, I mean, if it's hardware, you can find the chip that's on the board. Yeah. Right. And that we haven't seen, I mean, that would call for sanctions, like, just like, you know.
You'd stop the import.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen anything like that. Everybody, all the big companies have denied it. And, you know, Amazon Web Services, you know, Amazon said that in their dealings with Bloomberg and Business Week, that at no time past or present have we ever found any issue relating to modified hardware or malicious chips in Supermicro motherboards at any Elemental or Amazon systems. So, you know, I don't know where Bloomberg got this information. I mean, it's a pretty big story.
Yeah, it was mainstream news.
Yeah, it was on CNBC. so I'm not sure what the deal is, but I think if it was like a real thing, like it was there, we would hear a lot more about it. It would be on the news. Like it would be more than what we've heard. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Unless it's just the tip of the iceberg thing and they're really diving into it more, but I think that's unlikely.
Yeah.
And China has assured us that they're a resolute defender of cybersecurity. So,
yeah. we don't know, but it's an interesting story because it has to do with motherboards, obviously. And obviously that would be a way to spy if it was possible to do it that way. I mean, putting a chip on a board that essentially does that. Another interesting story that actually happened today is that Google is finally shutting down Google Plus, which I don't know when Google Plus started. I should probably look that up.
I don't have any events. I didn't have rarely
it launched in 2011. Okay. June 28th, 2011. So, I actually was I'm not a huge fan of Facebook. Like, you have to deal with it because it's Facebook, right? Yeah. And I just thought, you know, when we went from MySpace to Facebook, it was like a breath of fresh air. So that, and then just everybody, all the people that just post meaningless things and tag 10 people in this thing, and it's just like annoying on MySpace. Finally, you know, everybody's on Facebook now, and it's just like, I rarely go on Facebook to like look up stuff or like to see things, you know what I mean? And then Google Plus came out, and I was like, oh, like Google, like it's a massive company with a ton of resources to do this. And I initially liked it, but it was just like it never got the traction to be anything good. I mean,
there was already a thing doing what it wanted to do. So
yeah, and they didn't do anything better, I would say, than Facebook. They didn't. There was no like curated there wasn't a reason to go there after like the first year, basically.
Right.
One, there was a big security vulnerability that affected 500,000 users. And after Google's investigation of this and their APIs, they also discovered that nobody's really using Google Plus.
Fun fact.
Yeah, it says Google Plus has not achieved broad consumer developer adoption and has seen limited user interaction with apps. The consumer version of Google Plus currently has a low usage and engagement. 90% of Google Plus users' sessions are less than 5 seconds. That's pretty bad.
That's like an accidental click.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you know, I assume that like we post stuff on Google Plus, and I think like it's probably like we use like a program called Hootsuite to post on our Google Plus page, and it's like that's probably 5 seconds right there.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, it, you know, it's sad because like if anybody's going to make a social network to compete with Facebook, it would be Google. But
I think there's this thing where like people kind of don't trust Google, even though they shouldn't trust Facebook at all either. But like Google stores and mines data. So jumping into bed with all of my personal information beyond what they already have, just, I don't know. I think that's a mental thing.
And I think too, for like broad adoption, you really need, I mean, as an older person, especially older people, do I want to go on Facebook and Google?
Oh no.
You know what I mean?
One thing.
Yeah. So that's the thing. And it's just like annoying. Like, you know, I'm already updating. I mean, just on Think Computers, I mean, we have Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, we have, you know, our Google Plus page, YouTube, like how many more social networks are we going to get on?
Right.
You know,
and so, if you ask most people, like, what is it that you're not getting from Facebook? Well, nothing.
Yeah.
What is it that Google Plus is going to offer that Facebook doesn't have?
Yeah. There was initially it was supposed to impact your search results. That's why a lot of people jumped on it, especially like, you know, people who own websites and things like that. And you created your company page on it and everything, but they kind of took that away because it was a little unfair.
Unfair advantage.
Yeah. So, but it's sad to see it go. I mean, it's one of those things that was, you know, interesting when it was first announced and everything, and now it's just a.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that wraps up our news for this week. We'll talk about what we have coming up next week. I wanted to get it done, but I had an issue with the Cooler Master Air MA410M, which is Cooler Master's RGB'd out dual fan tower cooler. It looks awesome. I test the RGBs and everything. It just looks sweet.
Nice.
Yeah, it's actually, there's like 3,000 reviews on Amazon of this product, so it's very popular.
Nice.
As well. So all of that for you next week is a good cooler. We're testing it on Ryzen. So very interesting results with that. And I'll also have a preview of ASRock's Z390 Phantom Gaming SLI-AC. We're allowed to give you guys a preview before we launch our full review of the motherboard. So I have it here. And I'll have that preview for you guys before the actual launch date. So you get to, you know, get a little detailed information on that board. And we might have a couple other things, but it just all depends. Got a lot of testing because I have a Core i9-9900K sitting next to me and got to get that.
Right.
Got to get all that testing done. So yeah. So at the end of the podcast, we obviously talk about if we did any cool tech stuff or anything like that. This week, did you do anything cool or anything like that?
No, I broke a camera lens.
Oh, jeez.
Well, kind of. My camera fell out of the tripod. A couple feet down the concrete. Yeah.
What kind of tripod was it?
What is that? It's the Mauve. What brand is that? Mauve. Oh,
Manfrotto,
yeah.
your That's tripod funny. Doesn't have a locking thing, so it doesn't
of course it fall. Does. It didn't lock.
I was gonna say, because like mine has it's a sliding thing, so like if you loosen it, you can take the plate out. But
those are super annoying.
The plates,
the slide thing, like So like a long slide to get it in there? Yeah.
That's really easy. You just, I don't know. But anyways, yeah. If you leave the slide in there and don't lock it, if you move it, it won't fall out because it has a catch on it. So I've had that happen a bunch of times.
Yeah. But yeah. This felt like it was completely locked in, and then tilted it forward to move it, and it just fell right down, and it shattered it was my 14 millimeter wide, and it's got the sunshade is like permanently attached.
Yeah.
It's a concave or convex lens on the outside.
Yeah.
And so it like shattered part of it.
Ugh, that's not good.
And yeah. So yeah, that was a bummer. I guess that was a tech thing. So be careful with your lenses and your extremely expensive cameras.
I'm pretty excited to have new gen products in. To review. So I have all that stuff. But also on Netflix, they released they've been doing it like for a while. CNN has like the 80s or the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, like all the things that happened in those decades, and they just released the 90s one, and there's one and it's like a 10-part series for each decade, and they talk about all the different topics of the decade: music, politics, tech, whatever. For the 90s one, they talk about tech and how the internet became what it is, you know, with browsers and everything in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And it was just really interesting to hear, you know, people on Good Morning America like talking about the internet before it was like the internet, and how they talked about email and like just how they were trying to explain it to an audience like the most dense way possible, and they didn't even really know what it was. So to hear people talking about the internet like that was very interesting.
Nice.
So yeah, so if you have Netflix, I think it's just called the 90s or something like that. And I think that's like episode 6 or something in the series. It's very, very cool. It talks about Microsoft and how they went through that big antitrust lawsuit in the 90s too. So that's pretty interesting as well. You've never even heard about any of that stuff. And yeah, so, and it talks about the start of Amazon, the start of eBay, all that stuff started in the 90s. So very cool stuff.
Interesting.
So yeah, so that will end things here, guys. As we always say, we have our full show notes page that has everything that we talked about. So as we're talking about, you know, all these motherboards, you can just go ahead and click through. And if you're looking for us on your favorite podcasting software or app, it's just Think Computers, all one word. So until next week, catch you guys later.